Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Everyone listening knows the price that America is paying now, literally, for ignoring the Earth Day messages over the past 35 years. Oil is running out. And with that comes the enormous jump in the price of gas. It seems somehow some of our politicians wish to play with America's security. But the voices of many now are uniting in amazing new alliances to speak up about the need for a new American energy economy. This is now a matter of the gravest national security. Monday in Washington, D.C., there was a very amazing announcement by a coalition of people involved in the environment and security that normally don't come together and talk about the future of America's environment and energy independence, but they did. And what they are terming this new effort is the Re-Energize America campaign. And one of the key participants and promoters of this is Vice Admiral Dennis McGinn, USN, U.S. Navy retired, who is talking with us now. Are you in D.C.?
I am.
Tell us, first of all, about this event and how it came to be.
It came to be through the auspices of the Natural Resources Defense Council, who had been tracking this whole history of our growing energy dependence and was hearing voices from many, many different sections of society, many different organizations, not the traditional ones that you would think of in the past as being focused on energy and environment, and decided to put together a campaign called Re-Energize America to make sure that people understood that we were facing a national crisis that was growing every day and had aspects of threats to national security, to our economy, to our environment, and in some cases to our way of life.
Give us a broad spectrum about who actually was participating.
Well, we had in this particular event, the kickoff event, we had the Steelworkers of America represented. We had ranchers and, shall we say, stewards of the far west, where a lot of oil and gas exploration is conducted, represented by a sixth generation rancher from New Mexico. We had the evangelical movement represented by Reverend Jim Ball to make the case that this was really an issue of concern to those of faith, and I represented the position, if you will, on national security, the national security aspects of our growing dependence on oil.
Well, Admiral McGinn, you have at times in your life had a terrific amount of responsibility in terms of national security. Give us a brief background about your history.
Well, one of my most enjoyable and at the same time challenging roles was as commander of the U.S. Third Fleet, home ported right there in San Diego aboard the USS Coronado at the time. In that role, I was responsible for the readiness and training of Pacific Fleet carrier battle groups and expeditionary strike groups, and was very, very keenly aware of the kinds of challenges that our sailors and Marines working with their service counterparts might face in all areas of the world. As a result of that, I became very concerned about our growing dependence on oil from parts of the world that weren't very friendly to our core values in the United States. And then I started looking at some of the economic indicators, the tremendous growth of the economies of, in particular, China and in India, and also the growing demand that they had for this critical natural resource of oil.
Give us your assessment of our current situation.
Just briefly, it's we have about anywhere from 2 to 3% of the known world reserves of oil that are in the United States or United States territory. We use 25% of the world's oil that is produced. So this isn't a sustainable situation. If you add to that the fact that there's going to be more competition for oil resources over the next 5 to 10, 15 years, we have got to do something to ensure that we reduce our dependence on oil in general, but in particular on foreign imported oil, oil from unstable regions of the world.
What is the way forward then for America?
Basically, it's two major components. We can do so much better in terms of the value that we get from every unit of energy that we use. For example, fuel standards for our automobile and our trucking industry. We did tremendously well as a nation when we were faced with the crisis of oil shortages in the 1970s. We increased our efficiency in terms of energy usage. At the same time, our economy grew. So it isn't a situation where we have to sacrifice our quality of life. We don't have to sacrifice our economy, our the amount of jobs available to us in the challenge of increasing energy efficiency. In fact, by increasing energy efficiency, we can actually increase the robustness of our economy, increase more jobs, and maintain or increase our quality of life. A good example of this has to do with the transportation sector. This consumes about 60% of the energy that we import, and we can do so much better in terms of our choices of the fuel consumption standards that our vehicles use, how we use our vehicles. One of the easiest way to think about this is a typical hybrid, a so-called hybrid automobile. For starters, will double the fuel consumption of an equivalent type of vehicle that is not hybrid. And if you go into the future in the next 5 to 10 years, and we start seeing what are called plug-in hybrids, and hybrids whose internal combustion engines can run on 85-15 ethanol-gasoline mixes, you can get enormous energy efficiency out of every gallon of gasoline that you put into those vehicles. In our homes, we can do so much more. Most people are familiar with the Energy Star label. I think being selective as consumers in the types of appliances that we buy, how we heat and cool our homes, how we insulate them, we can maintain, as I said, a great quality of life. It isn't a great sacrifice. And the key point to remember here is that this is a pocketbook issue. For every extra dollar that we spend on fuel inefficiency in our cars or in kilowatt hours in our homes, that's money that could be used for so many other uses. And it just makes a lot of sense to make smart choices and ones that do not detract from our quality of life in the least.
You know, to a large extent, there are certainly the correlations to war, that this is a war. We really are struggling at this point to determine our future, and there are a lot of prices that we're paying. You're used to kind of rallying troops and getting them behind this. How do we actually then, therefore, bring this out to the American public to get them involved in this effort?
I think just making them aware of the fact that the choices that we make as Americans, making us all aware of the choices that we make, have a direct effect on our overall economy, and it's not necessarily in the long term, it can be in the very short term. Also, we should understand that when we import the large amount of oil that we do, that supply could be cut off at any time by a variety of circumstances. Of course, one of the most dramatic would be a terrorist attack on a major oil transshipment point overseas or major oil refining capability. The consequences economically of that type of a disruption of our oil supply would be very, very dramatic indeed. We would find ourselves looking at gas prices of $2.25 a gallon with nostalgia, as the price per barrel of oil went up because of the greatly limited supply due to that disruption of oil and the continuing demand in this country as well as in other countries.
Now, assuming that doesn't happen, and pray to God it never does, but if we don't actually then win this war into the future, what are the risks of failure to America?
Economic risk. Because every dollar that we spend on energy is a dollar that we're not investing. It's a consumption society. It isn't an investment society. It's a risk of national security in a traditional military sense, in that we make ourselves more and more vulnerable to being held hostage to disruption to the oil supply by some nation or group of nations that's hostile to our national purposes. and it's a threat to our environment. No matter whether you believe global warming is going to happen rapidly or happen in the far distant future, in very, very local ways, we all have experienced local smog, local air quality degrading, and I think that that is something that we all can do a much better job at solving by making better personal choices, just based on awareness of the fact that energy consumption really contributes to a variety of ills if we don't do it efficiently.
What kind of a time frame are we looking at to really start to see progress?
I think the time to make progress is literally right now. Every time that we make a decision to get a more efficient automobile or to use the automobiles we have in a more efficient way, it contributes to the solution. I think looking at things like renewable energy sources, becoming aware of things, it's a fancy term, but it's simple in its concept, renewable portfolio standards. That's simply a demand that can be placed on a utility company that a certain percentage of the electricity they supply to our homes comes from renewable sources like wind or biomass or photovoltaic, solar type of electricity. And that will increase the ability of the industry in the renewable energy area to meet some of this demand. We cannot, in the near term, expect to replace a huge amount of our fossil fuel energy requirements with renewables. But for every percent of energy that is produced for electricity or for transportation by renewables, that's 1% less that we are dependent on oil and dependent on foreign oil.
As you look out into the long term, 5, 10, 20 years, where do you see America's energy sources coming from at that point?
We will continue to use oil, but I see a greater proportion coming from renewables. I mentioned some of them, solar power, wind power. We've been doing hydroelectric power for many, many years. Biomass, bioethanol. There's a technology that is coming online now to use certain enzymes to be able to break down what were previously unusable parts of plant structures, vegetation structures, to produce ethanol, and that's called cellulosic ethanol. And all of these renewable sources will be coming more and more into vogue and into availability for consumer choices. I think in the energy efficiency arena, we'll see much more progress in more energy efficient appliances under the Energy Star program. We'll see much greater use of such things as ground source heat pumps to heat and cool our homes. Better insulation, not just for the usual attic insulation or window insulation, but indeed the whole structure of homes. And I see a whole variety of technologies that aren't around the corner, but literally are here today, available to consumers, that will have an increasingly greater effect. One of the things, though, that we all should be aware of is that right now, as we speak, there is a debate going on in the House of representatives in the U.S. Congress here in Washington, and it's about the energy bill. And one of the things that very, very greatly concerns me is there's about $3 billion of subsidies that are going to oil and gas companies in that bill that incentivizes exactly the wrong behavior. It's really important that our elected representatives in Congress stop incentivizing oil and gas companies that are making enormous profits at $55 a barrel oil from giving them tax incentives. Those tax incentives ought to be applied to the industries that are producing energy efficiency and renewable energy, energy from sources that are different than oils and natural gas sources. And I think that that is a great place to start in really, really turning the tide on our energy dependency. We were able to do tremendous things in the 1970s after the first oil embargo, and we can increase our performance, increase our energy efficiency, greatly increase our use of renewable energies, if we have the right kind of national policy and the right kind of law.
In terms of the Defense Department itself and the vast defense expenditures, do you see movement there? Because there is that could be a leading edge in terms of creating some of these new technologies, really developing them.
Absolutely. The Department of Energy is getting increasingly active in this area of, in particular, energy efficiency, but also renewable energies. For example, there was a report that was published by the Rocky Mountain Institute in September of last year called Winning the Oil Endgame. It's a terrific report. It's available free online at rmi.org, and it basically tells us how over a period of 25 to 30 years that we can eliminate our dependence on oil and greatly increase our national security in the process. The Department of Defense funded over 50% of the cost of producing that report, and I think it's clear evidence that they are keenly interested in this aspect of national security.
Vice Admiral Dennis McGinn, I want to thank you so much for your voice. I tell you what, it's a refreshing, wonderful, positive, hopeful perspective, and I so much thank you for sharing that on the Wild Side News.
Thank you. We can meet this challenge. We just need to become aware of what the great tools that are available to do it, and we can win this, America.
Let's win it.
Take care.
Thanks so much. There is no more pressing national security issue for America and ultimately the world than quickly and collectively developing a world that lives on renewable energy. Wow, that sounds so much like an Earth Day message. We just won the debate. When we return, we look at the new alliances and invite you to join those of us who are enlisting in the new energy war to win the battle to energy self-reliance. Here on the Wild Side News.